with the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico, and this is the 60th anniversary, and Nick Redfern's here. He wrote a pretty controversial book. How's it being taken?
Well, it's interesting, Jerry, that, you know, I think I kind of came into town expecting to almost be thrown out of town.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was never the intention of my book, Body Snatchers in the Desert. It was never to debunk Roswell as an ET event. What it was actually designed to do was to say to the reader, hey, this is a story I've been told. Can we verify it? Is it disinformation? Is it true? Or is there some other agenda at work? And so my aim was to put the information out for people to see, purely if the research community could take it further. And, I mean, I've got an interesting reception this weekend where people, you know, have sat and fairly listened to the story, and some have agreed with it, some haven't agreed with it. But I think, for me, the most important thing is that everybody is willing to sit down and discuss the case, which is the way I think it should be done.
Now you've been traveling around quite a lot. Mm. You're a hard man to keep track of, so you're on the trail of something here. What's mm-hmm. happening these days?
Well, you know, I try and keep busy. I like to write books and travel. You know, I enjoy the fun aspect of you know going out and actually doing an on-site investigation. I think with anything really, whether it's UFOs, cryptozoology, which I also do a lot of, I think the only way to really do an investigation is to get out there, you know, and do it personally. And not too long ago, I went to Puerto Rico doing an investigation into the Chupacabras.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's happening down there with those little guys?
Well, that's a really interesting story because, in some respects, on Puerto Rico at least, it seems to have gone a little bit quiet in the last few years, publicly at least. But when I went out there and I was able to speak with farmers, ranchers, police officers, civil defense workers, you actually find that there are still a lot of reports going on. It's just that a lot of people are more reluctant to come forward and actually, you know, have their stories spilled all over
because,
the media.
Yeah, because it has cooled down. They just, I guess the laugh factor or whatever got to them.
Yeah, but what I found interesting was that the reports that were very prevalent in the 90s are still going on. I spoke with a number of ranchers whose animals have been found killed under very weird circumstances, with literally like two puncture wounds and blood removed from the bodies. And the bodies were autopsied, examined by vets, etc. And, you know, it was quite clear that there was something out of the ordinary at work.
When you were down there, did you get some eyewitness descriptions?
We actually spoke with a lady named Norca, who lived high in the El Yunque rainforest, and she'd actually seen a chupacabras back in 1975, which was years before most of the more recent reports, and she described it as being almost like a monkey-like body with glowing eyes and claws and a pair of bat-like wings. And it was literally stood in the middle of the road. She had to bring her car to a halt because it was just stood there right in front of her. And she was a very, very credible witness.
So it had some sort of wings on it, huh?
Yeah, it looked almost like she described it as like bat-like wings with membranes.
I've had a couple of people tell me stories about this creature and that they've seen, and they talked about it jumped 20 or 30 feet. Maybe it's because it can fly.
Yeah, I mean, there are reports. We actually interviewed one guy who'd seen this creature actually lift off from a deep canopy of a tree that was like 30 feet in the air, and this thing was obviously perched or hiding in the tree. He heard a rustling and looked up, and this thing flew out the top of the tree and didn't so much fly, but it almost glided like a hang glider down the hillside to a nearby farm. And interestingly enough, the guy told us that a couple of days later there were some weird animal mutilations at the same farm where it flew over.
And we know about I guess it got the name for goat sucker or something like that.
Yeah, the chupacabras is sort of Latin for goat suckers.
So they may not only just be vampires, they might actually eat the flesh too?
Well, what we found, we didn't actually find evidence of them eating the animals. What was interesting, though, was that a number of people told us that when the autopsies were carried out, in addition to blood being removed, the liver of the animal was gone as well. The heart, kidneys, everything else was intact, but the liver was gone in each case. Now, what that means, I don't know, but to me,
that means they can't find a Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
Get a chicken liver.
Or McDonald's. But I think the interesting thing for me was that suggests we're not dealing with just a wild animal, because that would just tear
whatever.
The fact that it's going for specific things makes it sound that, like these things are intelligent in some capacity. So.
And so do you have drawn any kind of conclusion yet?
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting that a lot of the people we spoke with had UFO sightings or reports in conjunction.
So we're talking about a connection, just like sometimes with Bigfoot, you hear.
Yeah, exactly. What it was, we'd go to a farm where, for example, there'd been a chupacabras attack, and maybe the same farmer or somebody, a next-door neighbour, had seen weird lights in the sky the night before or the night after. And that probably happened 6 or 7 occasions of the people we spoke to, that we got this correlation between the weird animals, mm-hmm. or creatures, whatever they are, and UFO activity as well.
You got another book coming out anytime soon?
Yeah, I've got one coming out in September, which is called Memoirs of a Monster Hunter.
That's not far from here. It's called what again? Memoirs?
Memoirs of a Monster Hunter. And that's all cryptozoology. It's got the chupacabras things in there, Bigfoot, a few lake monster investigations, anything that's sort of, you know, related to weird animals, mystery creatures. And it's sort of a 5-year investigation of things that I've looked into in the United States and Puerto Rico.
So basically, you kind of narrowed in on those two countries.
Yes, the U.S. and Puerto Rico.
What other things do you have in there besides what we've talked about, cryptozoology? You know, do you have the Mothman story?
I haven't actually got the Mothman, but I've got one similar, where back in the 1940s there was a story of somebody who'd seen a weird creature like the Mothman, like a large man-like creature with glowing eyes and, again, huge bat-like wings. And this was actually very much like the Mothman-type situation mm-hmm. when
Where did this happen?
It's actually occurred in West Texas, not far from Lubbock.
Okay.
It ran about 1943, 1944.
Not a lot of places to hide out there.
Well, the thing. Yeah. This was actually seen in the middle of the road. It was literally, a guy was driving, and this thing was just stood there and just soared into the air. And that's something you get in a lot of the Mothman reports. You know, it just seems to take off vertically like a helicopter almost. And so that's in there. There's a couple of Bigfoot investigations I went on.
What do you make of the Bigfoot thing?
Well, you know, Bigfoot's interesting because a lot of researchers tend to take the approach that it's just, you know, a straightforward ape hiding in the forest. But the more I've looked into it, you find a lot of weird activity and weirdness associated with Bigfoot.
Like what?
Well, you know, some people talk about how the thing literally seems to vanish in the blink of an eye, or seems impervious to bullets. But there have been sightings of UFOs in the same area as Bigfoot activities.
In your investigations, did you hear about anybody actually taking a lot of shots at a Bigfoot?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of these. Where
it seems to me that Bigfoot habitats are out in the middle of, that would be a normal reaction if somebody would see something.
Yeah.
Kill it.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. And I think if it is a real-life creature, I think it's a shame that only way to find the evidence.
That's the way I feel about deer hunting. If it were a sport, give the deer a gun, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. At least give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I would prefer it if, you know, if one was captured, tagged, maybe, you know, take a few hair samples, DNA, and then let it go where it's found, and don't tell people, you know, the exact location.
Well, Bigfoot story seems like they might be intelligent animals or whatever they are, and they seem to have a family. I mean, I've heard many times there were two or three together.
Yeah, I don't think it's just like some large, lumbering, stupid, dumb animal. Mm-hmm. You know, not to call animals dumb, but, you know, I think there's more to it than that. And I'm interested in the sort of the stranger aspects of the Bigfoot reports that a lot of researchers don't like to deal with, you know, the fact that people have tried to shoot it and they're not able to, or sometimes people try to photograph it and the cameras have jammed, things like that. So.
Is there an odor with Bigfoot?
Well, some reports there is, yeah. Uh-huh. Other ones, it's almost, you know, they have the ability to just stealthily watch you and vanish, and almost, you know, like a chameleon sort of thing without even any detection.
I don't guess there's ever been a report of a Bigfoot remains when they pass away.
Well, there are stories. There are people who said
Has anybody ever seen the evidence? I don't know.
No, there's never really been, you know, a Bigfoot body or anything like that recovered. The closest, there was a story in the late 60s concerning something became known as the Minnesota Iceman, which was this strange body encased in a block of ice, and nobody's really sure if it was the real thing or not. But there are reports of people who said, you know, they've seen bodies lying in the woods and things like that.
Right. I've always suspected the Minnesota Iceman because of the time it was reported. Yeah. The original movie, The Thing, with James Arness and in the ice, it seems very similar.
Yeah, it does. there are suspicions about that particular case.
Yeah,
so,
How about that? That whole idea that people think they see things, monsters in the dark, and et cetera, because of, you know, we've been doing this in the media forever.
Well, you know, I think that happens. You know, a film comes out and people pick on it. But if you look back into sort of, for example, excuse me, old newspaper reports from 100-120 years ago, you get a lot of Bigfoot reports, particularly in the U.S. Then. At that time, they didn't call them Bigfoot; they were referred to as wild men of the woods. And you know, you can go back and look in the newspapers from Washington State from 1850, 1840, and some guy out hunting or prospecting said he saw this weird large ape in the woods. And this is long before, you know, the modern-day Bigfoot reports.
Sure, and long before modern communication,
yeah, no so Hollywood
films. The story wouldn't be around.
No, that's right.
Well, Nick, here in Roswell, you're still sticking by your story?
Well, you know, I mean, I just put the story out to see to see what the reaction was and to see if we could take it any further one way or the other. I mean, I'm totally open-minded as to where the truth lies. You know, how much is disinformation, how much is, you know, the government trying to confuse things even more. I just don't know. But I think the important thing is that we just keep doing research and try and get to the bottom of what really happened.
UFOs, you talked about the cryptozoology, and we talked about quite a few things. What other things interest you? I guess I almost want to say anything strange or weird, get Nick involved.
Well, cryptozoology and ufology are most the two main ones. But I've got a new book out right now called Celebrity Secrets, which is all about the way in which the FBI used to monitor and watch Hollywood stars from the 40s through to pretty much the 70s.
What was that all about, really?
Well, a lot of it was...
They thought they were all members of the Communist Party, supposedly.
Yeah,
it was the official line.
Well, some of them it was the communist angle. Some was that they're hanging out with the mafia and the mob, people like Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. Others, like Marilyn Monroe, were watched because they're having affairs with the Kennedy brothers, and the FBI was worried that the Kennedys were going to give her, you know, some snippets of secret information. And there are lots of weird reasons as well where the government just heard stories from informants that turned out not to be true, but that didn't stop them from watching the celebrities.
Well, put your place in the head of an investigator of the FBI, and you have carte blanche to investigate people. Wouldn't you rather wiretap Frank Sinatra than Joe Blow down the street?
Yeah, it's probably a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
A lot more interesting conversations.
So, you know, it always makes me suspicious of these investigations they do because hey, they're all human beings, too.
Yeah, that's right. They just want to know what's going on at somebody's party.
So you're a paparazzi. Oh, you're an FBI man. Okay.
Not much difference.
Yeah. So in this book, when you wrote this about the celebrities, who were some of the other people investigating?
Well, as I said, there's the usual ones like Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra. Also, Abbott and Costello. There's a big file on Abbott
and
Costello. Yeah.
Now, what did they think he was up to?
Well, it was weird that somebody contacted the FBI during the Second World War and said that they'd been listening to Abbott and Costello's radio show, and they thought that they were putting code words in there to send messages to Germany. And there was nothing to it. It was just the person who had reported it was obviously a little bit deranged.
Well, it's nice to see that Uncle Sam and his friends have not changed their modus operandi. Somebody calls up and reports some off-the-wall thing. They spend thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
and,
but John Wayne, he was a subject of a file. A lot of rock stars, Jimi Hendrix and people like that.
Well,
also,
I can understand the rock stars. John Wayne, of course, Miriam Morrison, he always acted like he's Mr. Patriot.
Yeah, well, he actually had a good relationship with the FBI. They got him involved in making narrations for TV documentaries, and he had a good relationship. He was the one person who wasn't sort of in the FBI's bad books. But lots of other celebrities, for example, John Denver, he was the subject of a file. John Lennon, Sonny Bono, all sorts of people. So.
Okay, so what books do we have the book here about Roswell you wrote,
yeah.
And we have one coming out in September, and then we have the one here. We need to plug the books and how they can find them.
Okay, well, right now the most recent book I've got is Celebrity Secrets, and the most recent UFO book is On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, which came out last year, which is how the government spies on the UFO research community.
I imagine while you were doing the Celebrity Secrets, or maybe the UFO investigation, they kind of dovetailed.
Yeah, they're kind of similar, you know, about government spies watching people in the public world. And then, as I said, in September, I've got Memoirs of a Monster Hunter, which is all about Bigfoot and lake monster investigations.
So. You wrote a book about the, you know, the UFO secrets and people. Did the government really investigate UFOs that pretty thoroughly? I mean, the people were talking about it?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I used the Freedom of Information Act to get hold of various files on people like George Adamski and George Van Tassel, two of the early contactees.
Yeah, back at the giant rock.
Yeah, well, George Van Tassel's FBI file is 300 pages long, and it's just literally a case of FBI agents going out and sitting in the audiences at conferences and writing notes about what he was talking about, then preparing reports. And I always say to people, you know, if there's like a 300-page file on George Van Tassel, government agencies don't put files like that together for no reason. That suggests to me there's a genuine puzzle to be resolved. And the fact that they're putting reports together on people like Adamski, a lot of the early people in the subject, Leonard Stringfield, I got hold of his FBI file, Gray Barker, Albert Bender, some of the early Men in Black researchers, and it was pretty much the case that there were more people being watched than weren't being watched in the UFO subjects.
Well, you know, my theory, maybe we've got about 30 seconds here, but my theory about it is that these investigations go on because the government, at least sections of the government, they don't know any more than we do.
Well, I think the government as a collective body has a lot more information than we do.
Yeah,
pilot reports. But whether they actually have an answer to the motivation behind why these creatures or beings are here, I think they actually may have theories and ideas and more information, but I'm not sure they've got ultimate proof. So I think that's possibly why they do monitor the UFO community to see if we're actually, you know, breaking new ground that would help them answer some of the problems as well.
Thank you very much, Nick Redfern, for coming by here at the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico. And Jerry Pippin will be back in a moment.